This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Culture Hour. This is Barb. I'm reading from The Week magazine dated May 3rd, 2024. Let's find out what happened, the main stories, and how they were covered. Congress passes long-delayed Ukraine-Israel aid. What happened? A $95.3 billion aid package, including desperately needed weapons and munitions for Ukraine, was signed into law by President Biden this week after a bipartisan alliance of lawmakers overcame months of resistance from isolationist Republicans. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican, Louisiana, defied threats to his speakership from GOP hardliners by bringing four bills to the floor, which collectively mirrored a $95 billion aid bill passed by the Senate in February, one that Johnson had refused to bring up for a vote. The bills included $60.8 billion for Ukraine, $26.4 billion for Israel and Gaza humanitarian aid, and $8.1 billion to counter Chinese threats against Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region. A fourth bill, added to draw conservative support, includes a provision giving the Chinese owner of the social media site TikTok 9 months to sell or face a possible U.S. ban. All passed handily with bipartisan support. The Ukraine bill was approved 311 to 112. All the no votes were Republicans. Sent to the Senate as a single package, the package passed 79 to 18. It was a difficult path, Biden said after signing the legislation, but in the end, we did what America always does. We rose to the moment. Aid for Ukraine will arrive at a critical time for the embattled U.S. ally, which is running low on stocks of crucial weapons and is facing relentless Russian attacks. CIA Director Bill Burns told Congress that Ukraine could lose by year's end without new aid. General Christopher Cavoli, head of the U.S. European Command, said Ukrainian artillery was being outshot by the Russian side 5-1. Such testimony helped convince Johnson to push the aid forward over the opposition of right-wing representatives who, with Donald Trump's encouragement, have variously opposed any Ukraine aid or insisted it be tied to border security measures. "This is not a game," said Johnson. "History will judge us." Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican, Georgia, accused Johnson of complete surrender to Democrats and vowed to push through a measure to oust him from the speakership. At least two fellow Republicans said they'd back the effort. Others said they'd consider it. "He's fallen right in line with the swamp," said Representative Eli Crane, Republican, Arizona. What the editorials said: the bipartisan effort was a victory for both Ukraine and functional American governance, said the Chicago Tribune. Trump, a devoted fan of Russian President Vladimir Putin, did his best to block Ukraine aid, and his stranglehold on the MAGA caucus meant we inexcusably left Kyiv hanging for months. But a rock-ribbed conservative from Louisiana summoned the courage to defy his party's extremist and push through aid that serves vital American interests. Johnson deserves immense credit for risking his political future in service to his country. "This was a show of will from the U.S. that will reverberate around the world," said the Wall Street Journal. "While we celebrate dodging a geopolitical disaster, we must call out the 14 House GOP isolationists who voted against all four aid bills and the 15 GOP senators who voted no. Apparently, they think we should ignore allies threatened by authoritarians on the march, like the 1930s Republicans who slept while Hitler and Tojo advanced. They lost this time, but this GOP tendency is dangerous." What the columnist said: Johnson's decision to back the aid package after months of opposition was the culmination of a remarkable personal and political arc, said Katie Edmondson in the New York Times. "He met with top national security officials and broad factions of GOP voters. He thought about his son, who's bound for the U.S. Naval Academy, and he prayed for guidance. Ultimately, he was moved by descriptions from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and others of the magnitude of misery Russia has unleashed in Ukraine and their warning that Putin's expansionist aims pose a broader threat in Europe and beyond. Johnson then became part of an extensive effort to convince Trump not to sabotage the bill, said Jonathan Martin in Politico. Former cabinet officials, retired generals, Republican lawmakers, and foreign officials, including British Foreign Minister David Cameron and Polish President Andrzej Duda, all made an aggressive case, many during trips to Mar-a-Lago. In one prong of the successful effort, Johnson and other Republicans warned Trump that if Kyiv fell, he'd take office in January to a crisis overseas. The House Speaker is no profile in courage, said Jennifer Rubin in the Washington Post. To praise Johnson as a hero ignores the immense damage he and House pro-Russian protagonists inflicted on our suffering allies, who were left twisting in the wind as MAGA lawmakers blocked aid that had wide bipartisan support. Delivered sooner, it could have prevented countless Ukrainian deaths and avoided a damaging blow to America's global credibility. The loss in Ukrainian lives, territory, infrastructure, and morale has been enormous, said Anne Applebaum in The Atlantic. It's helped feed the narrative of failure disseminated by pro-Russia influencers such as Tucker Carlson and Senator J.D. Vance, Republican, Ohio. But now they and the Kremlin have been dealt a severe setback, and U.S. arms will again start flowing to Ukraine. It's time to settle in for a long fight ahead and redouble our commitment to Putin's defeat. The GOP's pro-Russia caucus lost. Now Ukraine has to win. What next? If Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene follows through with her threats to attempt to remove Johnson from the Speaker's chair, he will almost certainly need to rely on Democrats to bail him out, said Veronica Stockwalsbury in CNN.com. Greene has already filed a motion to remove Johnson, and Representatives Paul Gosar, Republican Arizona, and Thomas Massey, Republican Kentucky, have said they'll support it. That's enough to sink Johnson if Democrats all vote for his ouster. Whether Democrats will throw him a lifeline isn't clear, but senior Republicans who back Johnson believe they can count on support across the aisle. Meanwhile, U.S. aid is now moving toward Ukraine, said Jordan Fabian in Bloomberg. The first $1 billion shipment will include air defense interceptors, artillery rounds, armored vehicles, and anti-tank weapons. U.S. officials have for the first time acknowledged that they're supplying long-range ATACMS missiles, which Ukraine has long desired in a push to strike deeper into occupied territory, and which were used last month to hit Russian troops in southeastern Ukraine. Controversy of the week. Colleges cracking down on anti-Semitism or free speech. When New York police cleared a Gaza Solidarity encampment from the grounds of Columbia University last week, arresting some 100 peaceful protesters, Columbia President Manoush Shafiq likely thought she'd saved her job, said Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times. A day earlier, Shafiq had appeared before a House committee investigating campus anti-Semitism, the same GOP-led panel whose December grilling of the presidents of Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania resulting in both women being driven from their jobs. Unlike the defensive Claudine Gay and Liz McGill, Shafiq readily agreed with her Republican inquisitors that some pro-Palestinian activism at Columbia had crossed the line into anti-Semitic harassment of Jewish students and said she was cracking down. Soon after, she invited the NYPD onto campus. It wasn't enough for Republican lawmakers, who demanded Shafiq resign over her failure to protect Jewish students. Meanwhile, her crackdown inspired protests at Yale, Harvard, Michigan, Berkeley, and Columbia, where undaunted students established a new encampment. Good for them, said Will Bunch in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Republicans are waging the greatest assault on campus free speech since the heyday of McCarthyism. Students need to channel the golden age of campus protest in the 1960s and fight back. This isn't about free speech, said National Review in an editorial. Shafiq only took action when the implicitly anti-Semitic rallies that followed Hamas massacre of some 1,200 Israelis on October 7th evolved into something more explicit. In recent weeks, Jewish Columbia students have been cursed at, shoved, spat upon, and encircled by masked and keffiyeh-wearing protesters telling them to go back to Poland or chanting, "Burn Tel Aviv to the ground." In 26 years on Columbia's faculty, I've never seen the ugly face of anti-Semitism expose itself like this, said David Scheiser in CNN.com. When students' political expression stops other students from learning, classes were held virtually this week after a campus rabbi urged Jewish students to stay home for their own safety. Administrators have a legal and moral imperative to intervene. That's honestly ridiculous, said Columbia student Malene Klein in Slate. Yes, the sheer size of the Columbia protest and the excesses of a few outside agitators may have made some pro-Israel Jewish students feel swamped and uncomfortable. But these are explicitly protests against Israel, not against Jews. Can we really not understand these protests without conjuring the specter of anti-Jewish animus? Said Moira Donegan in The Guardian. Is it so hard to believe that students might be sincerely outraged by the deaths of tens of thousands of people in Gaza? The outrage is sincere, said Michael Powell in The Atlantic, but at Columbia this week I witnessed a fervor that went beyond compassion. Hearing protesters inside the liberated zone casually call for the elimination of Israel, I sensed many had allowed the intoxicating language of liberation to blind them to an ugliness encoded within that struggle. The Palestinian cause needs American advocates, said Jonathan Chait in New York Magazine. The tragedy is that many student advocates have allied themselves with death cults like Hamas. The student protesters don't want peace, but a righteous war that ends with Israel's obliteration. Their objection is not to human suffering across the board, but rather that the wrong humans are suffering. It was a good week for safe sex after New York City lawmakers began considering a bill to dose the metropolis' booming rat population with a new contraceptive named ContraPest. The drug's inventor, Dr. Loretta Meyer, says the birth control pellets taste better than pizza. It was a good week for metal after Metallica's James Hetfield unveiled a new tattoo made from ink infused with the ashes of late Motorhead frontman Lemmy Kilmister. Hetfield says the tattoo, an ace of spades on his middle finger, will ensure Lemmy can still fly the bird at the world. It was a good week for undrafted free agents after New Orleans Saints owner Gail Benson gave Pope Francis a personalized jersey during a visit to the Vatican. Francis, 87, has a history of knee issues, but the Saints badly need depth behind off-injured right tackle Ryan Ramczyk. It was a bad week for specimens after Australian health officials pleaded with the public to stop bringing the snakes that just bit them to the ER. Medical workers are actually not trained to identify snakes, said Dr. Adam Michael. It just puts the staff at risk, as well as yourself. It was a bad week for the caretaker after a mysterious blaze erupted in the attic of Oregon's historic Timberline Lodge, featured in Stanley Kubrick's 1980 horror classic The Shining. Management said swift action by firefighters saved the lodge from a much worse outcome. It was a bad week for old school pranks after a 17-year-old Baldwinsville, New York, was arrested and expelled for impersonating his high school principal in a resignation announcement sent via fax. The student was caught because he listed his own cell number on the fax cover sheet. Only in America An Ohio high school student has been suspended and barred from her senior prom for bringing a bag of chips to school. Amber Guy said her daughter, Allie, knew a school staff member has a serious corn allergy, but didn't realize corn was an ingredient in the chips a friend gave her on the morning school bus. Allie is heartbroken and missing prom, said Guy. They're taking away a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. A Texas man is suing Cinemark for false advertising, alleging that the theater chain's 24-ounce beer cups hold only 22 ounces of liquid. Plaintiff Shane Waldrop said at-home measurements confirmed his suspicions about the size of a beer Cinemark served him on Valentine's Day. While 2 ounces may feel inconsequential to the seller, said Jarrett Elze, one of Waldrop's attorneys, the bottom line is the buyer is not getting what he's promised. In other news, warrantless surveillance law renewed for 2 years. President Biden last week signed a bill reauthorizing a key U.S. surveillance law after a clash over privacy protections nearly caused the statute to lapse. As the law hit a midnight deadline, the Senate passed a 2-year extension of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Enacted in 2008, Section 702 lets the government collect the data of non-citizens abroad without a warrant. A provision also lets intelligence agencies sweep up communications between U.S. citizens and foreigners abroad. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat, Illinois, pushed for an amendment to the House-passed measure that would have required warrants to review Americans' communications, just as our founding fathers intended. But that amendment and 5 others failed to pass. The Senate voted 60-34 to renew Section 702. The U.S. at a glance, East Lansing, Michigan. Restitution. The Justice Department will pay nearly $140 million to settle accusations that the FBI failed to promptly investigate sexual abuse by former Michigan State and USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar. Among the 139 claimants are medal-winning Olympians Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, and Allie Raisman. Members of the national team told FBI agents about Nassar's assaults in 2015, but for more than a year they took little action. Nassar continued his predatory behavior until news stories spurred a proper inquest. Restitution has been a long time in coming, said Rachel Denhollander, the first gymnast to publicly detail Nassar's acts. She also noted that in sexual abuse cases, most survivors never see justice. The DOJ payments follow ones from Michigan State and sports authorities totaling more than $880 million. Nassar is serving 60 years in federal prison, to be followed by more than 100 years in state prison. Nashville, Tennessee, arming teachers. The Tennessee legislature this week passed a bill permitting teachers and other staff members to carry concealed handguns on school grounds. The bill would mandate training for anyone carrying a gun, as well as approval from school officials, but parents wouldn't be informed. Republican Governor Bill Lee is now expected to sign the bill into law. The legislation comes a year after a shooter killed 3 students and 3 staff members at a Nashville school, leaving parents urging lawmakers in the GOP-controlled state to take action to prevent further shootings. Supporters of the bill argued that armed teachers would protect students by deterring future shootings, but critics called it counterproductive. Protesters demanding gun control rather than a law allowing more guns into schools filled the state legislature as the measure was considered. This is our reaction to students and teachers being murdered in a school, asked Democratic State Rep. Bo Mitchell. What's wrong with us? Walpole, Massachusetts. Family feud. The close-knit Kennedy clan last week officially rejected Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent bid for president with an endorsement of Joe Biden. RFK Jr.'s sister, Carrie Kennedy, made the announcement saying Biden is carrying on the legacies of JFK, RFK, and Ted Kennedy. Members of the political dynasty were already stumping for Biden, including with a St. Patrick's Day visit to the White House, where nearly 50 green-clad cousins posed for a group portrait. Publicly, the family says they're choosing Biden because of his long record and majority party support. Privately, they are reportedly furious with their black sheep brother and cannot understand his anti-science positions on vaccines or why he insists on being a spoiler in such a tight race. Another sister, Rory Kennedy, called his run dangerous because it might help return Donald Trump to the presidency. New York City, up in flames. A conspiracy theorist died last week after self-immolating outside the courthouse where jurors were being selected for Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial. Max Azzarello, a 37-year-old who had traveled to Manhattan from his home in Florida just days prior, threw pamphlets into the air before covering himself with accelerant and setting himself on fire. The pamphlets contained a web of theories claiming a conspiracy that involved government officials, crypto investors, and even the Simpsons cartoons. It did not have any clear political leaning. Police officers swarmed him within minutes and put out the fire, and an ambulance transported him to a hospital, where he later died. In a photo taken a day prior, Azzarello held up a handwritten sign reading, "Trump is with Biden." He also told a reporter the government is a secret kleptocracy and warned of an impending apocalyptic fascist coup. The world at a glance. Toronto. Gold heist solved. Canadian police arrested 9 people last week in connection with the theft of $14.5 million in gold bars from Toronto's International Airport last week. The heist was caught on security cameras. A driver presented a fraudulent shipping document that gave him access to an airport warehouse where a container of 6,600 gold bars had just been unloaded from a flight from Switzerland, then loaded it all onto his truck and drove off. Last September, the driver was arrested in Pennsylvania with 65 guns, and U.S. and Canadian officials say he was part of a larger plot to use proceeds from the gold to smuggle weapons into Canada. "This isn't just about gold," said local official Nando Iannucca. "This is about how gold becomes guns." Quito, Ecuador. Voters want war on gangs. Ecuadorians this week resoundingly approved a referendum on President Daniel Noboa's use of the military to crack down on drug gangs, passing 9 tough-on-crime measures with more than 60% of the vote. Narco traffickers working with international cartels have plunged Ecuador into chaos over the past year, busting gang leaders out of prison, taking over a TV station, and assassinating politicians. 2 mayors were killed last week alone. Noboa had used emergency powers to deploy the military on the street and at prisons and to label gang members terrorists, and now those powers are codified in law. "This gives him some vigor," said political analyst Andrea Endara. "But if the president does not begin to take actions to demonstrate that those yes votes have made the country more secure, this support will quickly be diluted." Sydney, censoring X. Elon Musk has accused Australia of censorship after a federal court ordered X to take down what the government calls terrorist content, a video of a knife attack on an Assyrian bishop that occurred 2 weeks ago in a Sydney church. After X said it had blocked the video in Australia while keeping it available elsewhere, ensuring Australians can still access it using a VPN, the eSafety Commissioner this week won a court injunction, ordering X to block the video everywhere. On X, Musk said he would appeal, saying an unelected official in Australia shouldn't have authority over all countries on Earth, and noting that the injured bishop supported keeping the video up online. He also called Australian Senator Jackie Lambie, who deleted her X account in protest, an enemy of the people. Tehran, war on women. As it trades missile attacks with Israel, Iran has launched a new wave of repression at home, creating a new arm of the morality police and deploying hundreds of officers to arrest women for dress code violations, like failing to wear a hijab. Videos on social media, many with the Persian hashtag for war on women, show police grabbing women and pushing them into white vans. Journalist Dina Golubov was rearrested this week after posting about her assault during an arrest the previous day. "I was violently taken to a room and subjected to electric shocks," she wrote. "I was handcuffed, and one of the officers sexually assaulted me." Iran's morality police had been less active since the death of a young woman in police custody in 2022 sparked the Women, Life, Freedom mass protest movement. People in the news. Soccer star David Beckham is suing his former Beverly Hills neighbor Mark Wahlberg over a $10 million business deal gone sour. In the lawsuit filed in California last year but revealed this week by TMZ, Beckham alleges the actor duped him in 2021 into becoming global ambassador for F45 Training, a fitness studio chain part owned by Wahlberg. Beckham, 48, claims the deal should have seen him receive F45 shares in early 2022, but the stock wasn't delivered until months later, when its price had fallen from $12 a share to $3. The former LA Galaxy player says he lost some $10 million in profits as a result. Wahlberg, 52, and his two co-defendants say Beckham's claims of fraudulent conduct are baseless. F45 shares are now worth 15 cents apiece. Chris Pratt and Katherine Schwarzenegger have angered architecture experts and aficionados by buying a historic mid-century modern home in Los Angeles, only to tear it down to make space for a 15,000-square-foot mansion. The Hollywood couple last year purchased the 1950 Zimmerman home, designed by renowned architect Craig Elwood, for $12.5 million. Hailed as highly intact and a noteworthy example of modernist design, the single-story property has been bulldozed and will now be replaced with a modern farmhouse-style home. It's sad to see icons of modernism needlessly destroyed by insensitive McMansion seekers, former IBM designer David Hill wrote on X. Kim Kardashian lost more than 100,000 followers on Instagram after Taylor Swift seemingly took aim at the reality star on her new album, The New York Post reports. A bonus track on the Tortured Poets Department, Thank You, A.I. Me, is supposedly about a high school bully, but Swift's fans are convinced the song is the Kardashian diss track. They point to the fact that the letters K-I-M are capitalized in the song title and that Swift describes the bully as bronze spray-tanned. Swift and Kardashian have been in a beef since 2016 when Kardashian's then-husband Kanye West rapped I Made That Bitch Famous, a reference to the time he interrupted Swift during her 2009 VMA's acceptance speech. Kardashian's social media posts are now littered with comments from Swifties that read, Thank you, A, I'm me. Obituaries. The journalist who spent 6 years in captivity, Terry Anderson, 1947 to 2024. Terry Anderson had just finished a Saturday morning game of tennis when they came for him. It was March 1985, and the former Marine was the Beirut bureau chief for the Associated Press and one of the few Westerners remaining in Lebanon as the Civil War reached its 10th year. As Anderson dropped off his tennis partner, three armed men jumped from a green Mercedes, grabbed him, and sped off. He'd spend the next 2,454 days in captivity, held by Islamists from the Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah. Kept in dimly lit cells where he slept on a thin mattress on a concrete floor, he was chained, blindfolded, and beaten. During his long stretches in solitary confinement, he said after his release, only his Catholic faith and innate stubbornness kept him from going insane. You wake up every day and you summon up the energy from somewhere, and you get through the day, he said, and you do it day after day after day. Anderson was born in a small Ohio town where his father was the village police officer, said the New York Times. After high school, he won a scholarship to the University of Michigan, but joined the Marines instead. He served in Japan and Vietnam as a combat journalist, then earned a journalism degree from Iowa State and started with AP. He reported from Japan and South Africa before heading for Lebanon, where he covered the war for several years before his abduction. During his captivity, haggard images of Anderson, imbued by his kidnappers, became famous across the world, said the Telegraph UK. In the U.S., he came to symbolize a hostage crisis that has ensnared 17 other Western victims. Fellow prisoners paid tribute to his bravery and sense of humor and described him feistily arguing religion and politics with his captors. Released at the war's end in 1991, Anderson returned to the U.S. and lived a peripatetic life, said the Associated Press. He gave speeches, taught journalism, wrote a best-selling memoir, and operated a blues bar, a Cajun restaurant, and a Virginia horse ranch. But he also struggled with the aftereffects of his captivity, including post-traumatic stress disorder. People ask me, did you get over them? He said in 2018. I don't know. Ask my ex-wife. Ask my third ex-wife. The guitarist, who was born a ramblin' man, Dickie Betts, 1943 to 2024. Dickie Betts was such a quintessential rock star. His hair long, his talent electric, and his attitude rebellious, that they modeled the guitarist in the 2000 film Almost Famous explicitly after him. As co-lead guitarist for the Allman Brothers Band, he helped shape its blend of rock, jazz, blues, and country into a new genre, Southern Rock. He wrote and sang several of the band's most popular songs, including 1973's Ramblin' Man, the ode to an unencumbered life on the road that was the Allman Brothers' biggest hit. The band played hard and often butted heads, breaking up and getting back together multiple times. When five or six guys are together working intensely, they can really get into some duels, Betts said in 1989. We had our spats and fights and knock-em-down dragouts. Born in West Palm Beach, Florida, Forrest Richard Betts was the son of a fiddler, said Rolling Stone. He picked up the ukulele at age five and then added mandolin and banjo before landing on guitar as a teen in hopes of impressing girls. As he began kicking around in bands, he met guitarist Dwayne Allman, who invited him to join a new venture alongside brother Greg in 1969. Dwayne Allman and Betts took rock guitar improvisation and two-guitar dueling to new heights, and the band continued after Dwayne's death in 1971, with Greg as leader. But as Betts' musical reputation increased, so did his wild streak, said the Washington Post. He started speeding around on motorcycles and trashing hotel rooms. At one point, he took a swing at a cop. Another time, he shot a cow. Eventually, the band's outsized drug and alcohol use was becoming an increasing problem, and they split up in 1976 for 3 years, and again in 1982 for five, said the New York Times. Betts focused on solo projects until the group reunited. Yet his reckless behavior never ceased. He was arrested in 1996 for aiming a gun at his wife, and finally the band fired him in 2000 for his drinking. Betts retired soon after, and later said that what he'd most loved about his career was performing live. The crowd got more out of the music than I did, he said. I'd just really get a kick out of the audience and how they could just kind of drift away to another world. The New South leader who fought racism and the IRS, David Pryor, 1934 to 2024. Over three decades as an elected official, Arkansas Governor and U.S. Senator David Pryor was the rare Southern Democrat who relentlessly advocated for reform and remained popular. In the Little Rock governor's mansion of the late 1970s, he swept aside decades of resistance to civil and women's rights to appoint blacks and women to positions of power. In the Senate, he championed the elderly, pushing for nursing home reform and lower drug prices. He also fought IRS overreach, crafting the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, a law granting citizens due process and representation during audits. The role of the reformer is no task for the faint-hearted, he said. He'd read in law school. I took that advice. It's carried me a long way. Pryor grew up in Camden, Arkansas, in a family of modest means and liberal outlook who resisted pressures to scorn their black neighbors, said the New York Times. His father was a local sheriff, while his mother played piano for a black church. After graduating from the University of Arkansas, Pryor started his political career in 1960 in the State House, then earned a law degree and became a U.S. representative in 1966. After his stint as Arkansas governor, with Bill Clinton as his attorney general, he served three Senate terms. A defining mission was his crusade for dignity for the elderly, said the Washington Post. As a congressman, he visited nursing homes and found them understaffed and often uncaring, and set up a House committee to investigate. Later, he chaired a Senate committee on aging. Retiring from politics after heart surgery, he went into academia, teaching at Harvard and the University of Arkansas. But Pryor said his primary vocation was reformer. I was going to change the world, he said in 2006. I wanted it to change overnight. Under making money, what the experts say. Gold bugs find selling is not easy. Costco is selling as much as $200 million in gold bars a month, said Catherine Hamilton in the Wall Street Journal. The wholesale retailer, where shoppers go for bulk orders of laundry detergent and toothpaste, started selling 1-ounce slabs of bullion last October, and they've become a huge hit with a new wave of gold buyers. Younger investors have taken an interest in precious metals to protect their wealth against inflation and economic disaster. But while Costco, which offers the metal at very close to the world market price, makes buying gold easy, selling it is difficult. Costco won't buy back the bars or accept returns, and online dealers charge fees. There are always pawn shops, but they almost never offer market value. Hidden fees for rejecting medical claims. An obscure consultant advises insurers in ways that often saddle patients with huge bills, said Chris Hamby in the New York Times. When an employee who is covered by workplace health insurance goes outside the network for care, many insurance companies consult with a little-known data analytics firm called MultiPlan on what to pay. The Times found that MultiPlan typically recommends that the employer not cover the whole bill. The insurer then gets paid a share of the money it saved the employer, with MultiPlan also collecting a processing fee. Patients get left on the hook for the remainder of the bill. Employers, too, can feel ripped off. One trucking company found that Cigna, the large insurance company, charged it a $50,650 fee to manage a $152,594 bill, of which just $7,879 was covered. Truth Social's True Believers. Supporters of Donald Trump, who invested in his money-losing social media company, have seen their share values plunge in recent days, said Drew Harwell in the Washington Post. They don't seem to be worried, however. Many of them considered their investments as less a business calculation than a statement of faith in the former president. Todd Schlanger, an interior designer in West Palm Beach, Florida, blames the drop in the stock, about 40% since late March, on all the liberals that are trying to knock it down. Jerry Dean McLean, who owns a tree removal service in Oklahoma, has lost most of the $25,000 he put into Trump media so far, but believes a rebound is coming. It's in Trump's hands, McLean said, and he's got plans. Under business, the news at a glance. Tech. U.S. passes law to force TikTok sale. Congress delivered TikTok's Chinese owners a historic rebuke, said Cristiano Lima Strong in the Washington Post. after years of failed attempts to tackle the app's alleged national security risks, the House and Senate passed legislation to ban the video sharing platform in the U.S. if its Beijing-based creator, ByteDance, doesn't sell it within 9 months. President Biden signed the measure, which was tucked into an aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. TikTok made a frenzied lobbying push, but didn't dissuade lawmakers worried that the data of its 170 million American users is vulnerable to surveillance by China. This is where the process really gets complicated, said Sapna Maheshwari and David McCabe in the New York Times. TikTok is likely to keep fighting by challenging the measure in the courts. Beijing could get involved by blocking the sale or export of the technology, including the algorithm that figures out what users like and serves up content, and is crucial to the app's success. And TikTok will carry such a hefty price tag, it's unclear who could buy it. During the wrangling, the app will probably keep functioning in some form for U.S. users. It's going to be a royal mess, said one technology regulation expert. Under business, the bottom line. Amazon's Prime subscription service hit a new high of 180 million U.S. shoppers in March, an increase of 8% from a year earlier. U.S. consumers pay Amazon $140 a year, or $15 per month, for a Prime subscription. The lowest salary that U.S. job seekers are willing to accept to take on a new job reached a record high of $81,822. This time last year, that figure was just under $76,000. On average, it takes about $95,500 to persuade men to take a new job, whereas women said they would accept roughly $66,300. Americans spent nearly $73 billion on flowers, seed, and potted plants last year, up 48% from 2019, after adjusting for inflation, according to the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. Donald Trump's stake in his social media company, Trump Media, is set to jump by more than 36 million shares, worth $1.3 billion. Though Trump Media shares have fallen by half from their high, they've stayed above a $17.50 target that earns Trump the additional shares. The International Labor Organization, or ILO, reported that currently more than 70% of the world's workforce is exposed to excessive heat on at least one occasion every year. Workers suffer 22.85 million occupational injuries and 18,970 work-related deaths from excessive heat every year. The descendants of the Danish butter magnate Lars Emil Brun will begin selling a 20,000-piece coin collection Brun had accumulated before his death in 1923. The collection is valued at $72 million. Under consumer, the 2024 Ford Ranger, what the critics say, Edmunds. The midsize truck segment might have a new front runner. Though the Toyota Tacoma and Chevy Colorado tend to outsell the Ford Ranger, Ford has just upgraded every aspect of its already capable midsize pickup. Improved cabin? Check. New tech features? Check. Smoother ride? Yep. Sure, the price you'll pay has also risen. Overall, though, we think you're getting your money's worth. Car and driver. With its widened stance, the Ranger now looks more like a downsized F-150, yet Ford's middle child still maintains the tidy dimensions necessary to negotiate tight parking lots and ease into a garage. With its improved suspension, the Ranger now feels infinitely more stable and buttoned down, and its wider frame allows Ford to offer V6 alternatives to the returning standard engine, a 270-horsepower Turbo 4. The $55,470 off-road ready 2024 Ranger Raptor packs a 405-horsepower twin Turbo 6. Autoblog. Even in the base XL trim, the new Ranger's interior is not only suitably modern compared with its antiquated predecessor, but its quality is also surprisingly good for a midsize truck. There are plastics here, but they are richer-looking plastics than what you'll find in the Tacoma and GM trucks. From nose to tail, Ford nailed it with this bigger, tougher Ranger. The tricky bit will be getting mid-sized truck buyers to look at something other than a Tacoma. A downsized F-150 from $32,670. The best of Mother's Day gifts. Owala Free Sip Water Bottle. Owala is O-W-A-L-A. Personal Hydration's current IT bottle comes in more than a dozen fun color combinations. Its innovative two-way mouthpiece allows for both sipping and gulping, and the leak-proof lid locks securely in place. $28 at owalalife.com. Kuretake Ganzai Tambi Watercolors. These aren't cheap drugstore watercolor paints. They're imported from Japan, and pros and amateurs alike love them because they have the opacity, pigment, and impressive vividness of acrylic. $57 at dickblick.com. Dick Blick is DICKBLICK.com, and it's the Kuretake, Kuretake, Ganzai, Gansai, Tambi, Tambi watercolors. Beloc Tea Sampler. Beloc is BELLOCQ. A sample of teas from Beloc, a Brooklyn atelier, will delight the mom who prefers leaves over beans. The Signature Blends collection includes 5 green, black, and white blends, plus 25 filter bags. An herbal sampler is also available. $38 at beloctea.com. That's BELLOCQTEA. Nod Pod Sleep Mask. A cute caterpillar of a thing, the Nod Pod is so soothing and effective, it will convert sleep mask skeptics. Its 4 segments are filled with beads, making it a mini weighted blanket for your eyes. It can also be popped into the freezer for cooling relief of a headache. $34. NodPod is NODPOD at nodpod.com. Calzuro Classic Clogs. Calzuro is CALZURO. Made in Italy and available in a rainbow of colors, these slightly heeled rubber clogs are perfect for gardening, clopping around the house, or otherwise looking fabulous. Designed for nurses and surgeons, they provide excellent comfort and support. $107 at Calzuro, CALZURO.com. Tip of the week, 5 fixes for aging hair. 1. Gray blending offers a way to gracefully transition to gray hair. Instead of fully coloring your hair to darken it, a colorist adds both light and dark hues, helping gray strands blend in. 2. Purple shampoo, which is often used to combat brassiness in blonde hair, also counteracts yellowish undertones in gray hair, making it look more vibrant. Use it just once or twice a week. 3. A texturing spray can temporarily add volume to thinning hair. Volumizing shampoos or conditioners, by contrast, have little effect. 4. Topical minoxidil. The medication found in Rogaine and other over-the-counter products does stimulate hair growth. You have to apply it twice a day, though. Minoxidil pills are available by prescription, but possible side effects include changes in heart rate and blood pressure. 5. An anti-frizz spray can be useful for hair that's turned wilder with age. The sprays contain polymers that tame hair when humidity rises. Alternatively, ask a pro about keratin treatment. Under Health and Science, hot oceans are killing corals worldwide. Record-high ocean temperatures have triggered a mass bleaching event in coral reefs around the world. It's the 4th such event on record, and on track to be the worst. Over the past 14 months, bleaching has been documented in every major ocean basin, from the Florida coast to Australia's Great Barrier Reef. In some places, the water has been so hot that the corals haven't had time to bleach. They've simply died as if cooked. Corals are stationary animals that get their bright colors from the symbiotic algae they depend on for nutrients. When they are stressed from overheating, they release that algae, turning the reefs white. Usually, such bleaching doesn't mean the coral is dead, but it is a warning sign that it will perish unless conditions improve. Unfortunately, scientists think that's not going to happen anytime soon. Sea surface temperatures have been setting near daily records for more than a year, driven by an El Niño weather pattern and climate change. There's nowhere to hide from global warming, marine biologist Terry Hughes tells Scientific American. Even the most remote and most pristine coral reefs are vulnerable to these repeated bouts of bleaching. Loss of the world's reefs would be a massive blow to the marine ecosystem. Reefs nurture a quarter of all marine species at some point in their life cycles and support fish that are eaten by millions of people. Evening exercise is best. Working out in the evening rather than the morning may help you live longer. That's the conclusion of a new study by researchers in Australia, reports the New York Post. The researchers looked at the health data from nearly 30,000 obese people over 8 years. The participants wore activity trackers for 7 days nonstop, which allowed the researchers to group them into those who tended to move more in the morning, afternoon, or evening. After accounting for lifestyle factors such as smoking, alcohol consumption, and sedentary time, they found that the evening exercisers were less likely to suffer from everything from minor heart problems to death. It didn't have to be a full workout either. Any type of movement showed benefit, as long as it got the heart rate up for a few minutes. Exercise is by no means the only solution to the obesity crisis, says lead researcher Matthew Amati from the University of Sydney. But this research does suggest that people who can plan their activity into certain times of the day may best offset some of these health risks. Kids' noses fight COVID. Why are children so much less likely than adults to develop COVID? It may be because their noses are better at fighting the virus, reports BBC.com. In a new study, scientists analyzed cells from the nasal lining of people in three different age groups, kids under 13, adults between 30 and 50, and those over 70. After growing the cells in lab dishes, they infected them with the novel coronavirus and watched what happened. The children's cells were quick to mount a defense against the virus by increasing production of interferon, an antiviral protein. But cells of the middle-aged group had a much slower response, while the over 70s actually produced more infectious viral particles. Study leader Claire Smith from University College London says nasal cells deteriorate with age, possibly because they have been exposed to more nasties, resulting in a detrimental dysfunctional repair process. She and her team now want to look at how the nose responds to other viruses like the flu and RSV. Understanding the cellular differences at the initiation of infection is just beginning, she says. It must be true, I read it in the tabloids. A British couple was accidentally divorced when a lawyer hit the wrong button on his computer. The lawyer intended to process a divorce for another client, but accidentally selected from a drop-down menu a couple still negotiating financial arrangements for potential split. The lawyer tried to have the divorce reversed, but was denied by a judge who said the certainty and finality of divorce orders must be respected. An exasperated Ayesha Vardag, the head of the law firm that made the mistake, said the state should not be divorcing people on the basis of a clerical error. An elephant who escaped from a circus surprised local residents by strolling the streets of Butte, Montana, for about 20 minutes. Viola of the Jordan World Circus was getting a bath outside the Butte Civic Center when a truck backfired and the spooked animal took off. It was pretty exciting, said resident Joss Hannafin. It's not every day you see an elephant walking down Harrison Avenue in Butte, Montana. Viola crossed a busy avenue, traversed a casino parking lot, and left a deposit on a resident's lawn. Her handlers finally coaxed her into a truck. British sheep farmers have found an unlikely way to keep rams from fighting, applying Axe body spray. The strong-smelling deodorant called Lynx in the UK apparently masks the hormones that spark rams' aggression. When she sprays four-year-old Cash and Casper with the deodorant, there's no argy-bargy, no rowing. Fighting, said Sam Bryce, a sheep farmer in England. She learned the trick by asking the Facebook group Ladies Who Lamb for advice on curbing a rambunctious ram. It's quite a well-known thing, she said. Under wit and wisdom. Why do we need to make the rich richer, to make them work harder, but make the poor poorer for the same purpose? Economist Ha-Joon Chang. Regret is an appalling waste of energy. You can't build on it. It's only good for wallowing in. Writer Catherine Mansfield. They say housework can't kill you, but why take a chance? Phyllis Diller. A successful man is one who can lay a firm foundation with the bricks others have thrown at him. David Brinkley. I just filled out my income tax. Who says you can't get killed by a blank? Milton Berle. We cannot always build the future for our youth, but we can build our youth for the future. Franklin Roosevelt. Technology is anything that was invented after you were born. Everything else is just stuff. Alan Key. Under poll watch, 50% of Americans, including 47% of independents and 15% of Republicans, say they will consider Donald Trump unfit to be president if he's convicted of falsifying business documents to conceal hush money payments. But only 35% think his actions were illegal in the hush money case, compared with 45% who say he broke the law in trying to overturn the 2020 election, and 47% in taking classified documents. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week.